Thanks for listening to a Joy 94.9 podcast from Chicks Talking Footy.
You are listening to Chicks Talking Footy with Beck and Motti. Joining us for a chat is award-winning journalist, host and creator of the Footyology podcast and long-time Essendon supporter, Rowan Connolly. Welcome to the show, Rowan.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Let's get straight into it, shall we? Essendon has been dominating the headlines for the last couple of weeks, so we thought we'd have a chat to you as someone who actually is in the know. We know you've worked down there a couple of years ago on the website and interviews and stuff, so let's start with an easy one, shall we? Do you think it's rotting inside at the Bombers, as the media would have us believe?
Yes. It doesn't give me any pleasure to say that, but wow. I think there are some major cultural issues that extend well beyond the playing front, and they've probably been brought to light by the, you know, the issues with players wanting to leave. But I feel, and I have felt this for a long time, that in lots of ways they've been papering over the cracks of the whole club for close to two decades. And some of these things are very hard to articulate. I have some sympathy for them in that some of these things are probably hard to even spot at the time. They're things that you end up seeing in hindsight. But there's a whole lot of issues, and they go to not just the players, but the process of appointments, how they've happened, the high turnover of staff, both in the football department and beyond the football department. I think a lot of it is historical baggage. It's no accident that three clubs who have had great struggles in the modern era are Essendon, Carlton and Richmond. And, you know, look at Richmond. They're in the wilderness for more than 30 years. They really struggled to get beyond that thing about where Richmond, it worked for us in the 70s when we did it this way, so why isn't it working now? I think Carlton paid that price. You know, they breached the salary cap and that set them back. Some people would say they're only just recovering. They had a quick fix mentality. They looked for messiahs to save them. We're Carlton. So if we bring in a big name coach like Dennis Pagan or later on Mick Malthouse, that'll fix it. It doesn't. These are all clubs that have dominated in the old VFL era and have found it harder to move into the modern day mindset, I think, because of their historical success.
So they're resting on the laurels of we're a big club and we're a dominant club and everyone should aspire to be with us or to be like us.
Exactly. And it's the sort of thing you can sort of kid yourself that you're not doing. They've got new headquarters out at Tullamarine. But that's a good example too, because look, I've been in that facility enough. It is in terms of player facilities and whatever, there's none better. But, and it struck me the first time I walked in the place, culturally, it's barren. You know, it doesn't, it feels like a corporation. It doesn't feel like a football club. And how do you generate that feeling? Well, there are things you can do that I don't think they've done. For example, and this might be really trivial to some people, but you drive into that club down Melrose Drive, there's no signage on the fence that says you're driving into Essendon Football Club. And I remember saying to someone, why haven't you got a sign there? And they said, oh, we did, but someone pinched it. And I said, make a bigger sign that you can't pinch.
Lock it down. I mean, Caro talked about in an article a couple of days ago about whether the move from Windy Hill has had some impact on this sort of thing. And I think that's you're saying the same thing, aren't you?
To an extent, I mean, it's not the be all and end all, but I think they could have done a lot more to generate that football club like to make it an attractive place for fans to just go and watch training and stuff like that. This is the thing, like, you know, modern football clubs are businesses, but they're not. In terms of the vibe that's created, they are not. This is one thing I think Collingwood has always done very well. They are a big organisation, a big sporting club, but you visit their home, it still feels like a footy club. You know, a football club revolves around, to an extent, the volunteers who get behind it. And there's been a, I don't know if people saw this, but there's been a really sad account from a trainer at the club of 30 years experience who, like a lot of voluntary staff there, was pretty much sort of ostracised and then let go.
And I did see that. Is that the guy he wrote a post on Facebook or something?
Correct.
It was
Craig Yorston, his name.
It had a real emotional vibe to it, not saying that his wording was emotional, but you could just feel his undercurrent as you read it. Did you see that, Beck, at all?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It kind of, as you're saying, Rowan, it shows, you know, they're the sorts of things that a footy club's about people. Yes, it's about buildings, but it's about people at the heart of it. And if you can't get the people inside right, it's hard to convince the people on the outside to stay behind you.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, look, since I weighed into it last Thursday, whenever it was, I've had a succession of people involved with the club contact me to say,
really?
You're spot on. We're in enormous trouble. And so
when you say, let me jump on that. When you say involved with the club, are these sponsors or are they actual
football club employees?
Wow.
They're employed in some cases, very senior positions. And
I think they really need a big marketing campaign.
Well, besides that, I've spoken over the last few weeks to at least a dozen former players, former officials. Everyone feels that this club is in enormous trouble, but this is another element to it. There's been a politicisation of the board, and without wanting to go on and on about it, there's an election coming up. There's two spots on the board up for election. They replaced a current director casually with Kevin Sheedy. Now, I'm a Sheeds fan. I think he's got a lot to contribute. I don't think he needs to be on the board to do that. Anyway, the upshot of this is that he will come up for election after being casually appointed in a couple of months. The club has effectively tied him to a ticket with Sean Wellman, another former premiership player who is football director. And it means that a whole lot of people who are considering running for the board because they want to see this change have effectively been shut out, because the fact is you never will beat Kevin Sheedy or a former premiership player in an election. And the board now is, a majority of spots on the board are board appointed rather than member appointed. So people feel like their whole club has been taken away from them. And I'm not talking about supporters here. I'm talking about past premiership players, past officials in very successful eras who are ringing me and saying, we know it's stuffed. We don't know what we can do about it.
Rowan, it's obviously, as we've said, not one issue, but one of the really public things I think everyone as an outsider of the club saw this year was, I guess, messy, if you want to call it that, handover between John Worsfold and Ben Rutten. What's your take, I guess, on how that was managed? We've seen other clubs do succession plans really well. And do you think Rutten's the right man for the job anyway?
Well, to answer the second bit first, I'm very prepared to give him a shot, you know, like I respect the basis on which they thought he would be a good coach. We've got to give him a shot at it. Having said that, there's no doubt that in the 2 years he's been there, one as an assistant, one as a co-coach in name, I don't think anyone would say that the rapport has been built between he and the players to any sort of satisfactory level. To your point about the appointment, and this is terribly disappointing, look, they didn't really conduct a process. This has happened before where Paul Little, 5 years ago, unilaterally decided we need John Worsfold as coach, jumped on his private jet, went over and asked Worsfold if he'd coach, came back. The rest of the board found out about that via the media. They weren't consulted at the time. They had drawn up a short list of candidates, all of whom got wind of it, rang them and said, take me away from it. And I can tell you that two of the people among those candidates have gone on to be very successful coaches.
Right, let's start the guessing game. No. Ken Hinckley.
You can do that later. as far as the Rutten appointment goes, and this has annoyed me as well, they moved too hastily to reappoint Warswile. Warswile was appointed initially on a three-year deal. He coached 2016 with a virtual reserve side. He took them to the finals in 2017. Straight away, they thought, we've got to give him an extension, a two-year extension. They didn't need to do that. It wasn't like there were other clubs beating down a path to his door. So, okay, they gave him a two-year extension, got to the end of, or got halfway through last year, and they sort of decided, gee, you know, we don't think he can take him any further. We need someone else. They then thought, we need to avoid the bad optics of a payout for a season in which he doesn't coach. And to be honest, I think it was about the ego of the CEO, Xavier Campbell, who was the man responsible for giving the extension, didn't want everyone to turn around and go, well, hang on, you extended him and now you're sacking him a year prematurely. That doesn't reflect well on you. So they very hastily concocted a handover. Anyone with any close connection to that club would tell you, has been a joke. And it's been a joke, not because those two guys didn't get on, but mixed messages. Plus, they had Rutten effectively coaching the team and poor old John Worsfold being the stooge who went in front of the media for every game. It wasn't even his team or his coaching plan that he was answering to. And that's just rubbish. And it's a sort of spin and manipulation and, frankly, deceit that Essendon members are absolutely sick of.
You know, I'm a member and I have followed the club and I would say I know about football. I don't even know Ben Rutten's voice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I know that sounds mad, but I haven't heard him speak.
Well, exactly. I mean, how could you, what sort of, and this is another thing I'm critical of, their media strategy. What sort of strategy is it to have a guy you have officially already saying he's going to coach in his own right, and you don't even gradually introduce him to your fan base. And for that reason, right at the last minute, the very last game, they said, okay, well, Ben, you take this press conference.
That's stupid. They're mad.
It's insane.
It is. Now, the one name that everyone hung on to and it seems a team was built around or structured around was Joe Danaher. So that's gone on forever and a day. He's left. In hindsight, should they have let him go at the start of last year?
Yes.
And did you think that at the time, or is it purely hindsight?
You know what? I'm struggling to remember exactly how I felt because I've had so many emotions about it, but it was pretty obvious he was desperate to leave. And again, I think ego got in the way there and that whole big club status. It was, hang on, you're not going to force us into doing a trade for you. We're going to make you stay and you're going to learn to love the place. And it backfired. So it means that now, rather than get a pretty attractive trade deal for him, they'll get what is probably a pretty inadequate compensation pick just so Essendon and list manager Adrian Dodoro can beat their chests and go, we're Essendon, no one pushes us around. And it's this sort of brinksmanship that is like 20 years out of date. The good clubs do deals. The good clubs accept that, you know, you're going to lose some quality, but you'll pick up some quality. The good clubs do things like what Port Adelaide did, which was accept the loss of talented players like Chad Wingard and Jarman Impey and Jared Pollock in their ultimate goal of getting more young talent to that team. And they've been transformed by the enthusiasm of those young, very good kids like Butters and Dersma and Rosie. Essendon don't have the guts to do that. And I think at some level it takes guts. And Hawthorn did it. Hawthorn did it by winding up Sam Mitchell and even Luke Hodge and Jordan Lewis, you know, and they're not in a great spot now, but it was going to happen. At least they cut their losses and did it then rather than now. Essendon is so slow to react on these things. And I'll say this too, you know, it's one thing to say now, okay, we're going to hit the draft hard. Their development of young players has been terrible. And this is a question I've thrown up for a long time now. Answer this one, Essendon fans. How many champion players has the Essendon Football Club produced of its own accord since the 2000 Premiership? I can think of one, Job Watson.
He
was a father-son pick.
And you know, he was stripped of a Brownlow and he's so you know, he was so sort of savaged by the public and stuff. It's amazing he's as good as he is.
Oh, yeah. Well, look,
as a person, yeah.
He bore a ridiculously heavy burden. But my major point is the development of young talent, and they get it, is totally inadequate. And they've had a revolving door of development coaches even over the last 4 or 5 years. At some point, you know, someone has to take responsibility for what's going on at this club and say, no more passing the buck, no more excuses about the saga and you know, we need to treat the players involved in that with respect. Well, they've treated them with more than respect. They've bent over backwards for them, and that has helped destroy the culture among the playing group.
So that's true, is it? That thing I read is true, that they were told they won't get dropped or any of that stuff?
I wouldn't be prepared to say unequivocally that was formalised, but there's absolutely an understanding that these guys would, generally speaking, be looked after. And you've only got to look through the performances of some of them and how continually they've managed to get senior games to know that, yes, that's happened and who they're talking about.
It really makes sense, doesn't it, actually? Anyway, look, just before you go, we've got some good news, and that was Andrew McGrath signed for 2 years. So
I can tell you, without naming names, there are a couple more who have re-signed, but they've been a bit gun-shy about announcing it because they're getting kicked from pillar to post. They sent out a member survey last week. How do you reckon that was answered by people?
I didn't bother. I just looked at it and I thought, oh, can't be asked.
Well, I don't think they've got some very favourable responses.
Well, maybe I should weigh in.
Maybe take your chance, Monty.
I will. Rowan, it's been brilliant to chat to you, and I wish we could chat for hours. Maybe we will another time. So,
no, pleasure. If I could say one last thing to supporters listening to this, I'm not overstating it. This club is in absolute crisis, and you need to make your voices heard. You need to vote at the club election. You need to get in there because the soul has been sucked out of this football club, let alone the performance, and it's going to take a lot of hard work to get that back, and everyone has to be on board if they're going to get back to anything like the position they held.
Oof, I'm not sure that I feel any better, but thank you for being so candid, because so many aren't, so really appreciate that. And,
oh, I'm pretty worked up about it. So yeah,
we got you on the right day. Yeah.
Great, Rowan. Enjoy grand final night and whatever you may be doing on that.
No worries. Thanks,
Abby. Cheers.
For more Chicks Talking Footy podcasts, go to joy.org.au or wherever you get your favourite podcasts.